Welcome. Well, you're at home with Jim and Joy, and you are an important part of our EWTN family, and we are so delighted that you have welcomed us into your home. Please send us an email with a question or your comment to jimandjoy@ewtn.com. And today, we're excited to welcome back Marshall Siegelstein. She has covered family issues for over 25 years as a producer for CBS This Morning, and she has also written for Fox News, First Things, and the National Catholic Reporter. And today, we're having her back where she's gonna share about a great book, Don't Let the Culture Raise Your Kids. And this great book is available at ewtnrc.com. And you may be at home and you're thinking, I raised my kids, they're out, done. Well, you have grandchildren and you're seeing maybe some of the world creeping in and thinking, why are they raising their kids like that? Why do we have options about things and choices and conversations? And I have been into homes where homes are children run. They're run by the children, and you're in there, you're like, whoa. It's like the house gets turned upside down. Yeah. And so we need to arrest this time and saying what is good, what is bad, and what do we need to do to take charge as parents so that if something is broken, you can fix it. And Marcia shared that so well, that it's never too late to hit the reset button and say, what have we done wrong? Let's fix this thing.
She's really saying in so many ways, you need to know the truth by the natural law, our Catholic teaching, what's going on in the society, in the culture, that if you don't raise your children, they're more than happy to raise your children for you. You don't want that. Know the truth, share the truth, and parents model the truth. That is the order of Almighty God, and you will have the anointing of the Holy Spirit upon your children and proper teaching upon them. Still no guarantee, but you don't want to promulgate falsehoods like the culture is doing in too many ways, so many ways. So Marcia Siegelstein is here to pack your bag full with truth, and to equip you to be the best parent you possibly can be. We'll be right back. Plenty more to come. Don't go away.
Welcome back. Well, today we're thrilled to welcome back Marcia Siegelstein. She has covered family issues for over 25 years as a producer for CBS This Morning, and she's also written for Fox News, First Things, and the National Catholic Reporter. Today she's going to be discussing with us the great book that she authored entitled Don't Let the Culture Raise Your Kids. And this great book is available at ewtnrc.com. We had a great show with Marcia yesterday. And if you didn't get to see it, we're going to have Marcia give us a quick review as to why she felt like now, a time such as this, she believed that she needed to author a book screaming, because the culture is screaming, if you haven't noticed, it's rather angry out there. Don't let the culture raise your kids. Marcia, tell our family a little bit about a quick review as to why you chose the title for this book, and now for a time such as this.
Oh, thank you so much, Joy. Well, I think the book is really intended as a wake-up call for parents. I'm a parent. My kids are grown up now. So they're a little bit older, like late 20s, early 30s. But even as a parent, I was taken by surprise many, many times by things that were out there in the culture that I didn't experience as a child. Protections that just aren't there for kids today that were there for me. And so when I started writing about this stuff, I realized, the culture comes at us rapidly. And our kids are, their brains are young, they're still being developed, and we need to be careful what they're exposed to. I was taken by surprise by things that my kids were exposed to in their schools. My kids were sort of the early users of, say, Facebook. And both of them have said to me separately on separate occasions, we wish Facebook had never existed. So it is easy to be taken by surprise, even if you're a very careful, conscientious parent. It's easy to be taken by surprise at what's going on in the world around you and the influences that can be, that your kids can feel. So I think it's really important in this time of the world to be an intentional parent, to think carefully about how you're going to be a parent, and to know the dangers, the potential dangers that exist out there for your kids that maybe didn't exist when you were growing up. So you can be aware of them, you can prepare for them, you can prepare your kids for them, and you can find maybe some solutions to the issues that they present.
I like the term you used. Shouldn't really have to be said. You should just be a parent. But you said it's time to be an intentional parent. So we've got to make those commitments. And there's just so many younger people, I guess, have these different ideas about parenting, which you covered so well in your first chapter and in the first show. So we're not going to go there. But there needs to be a recommitment. It's like taking your baptismal vows over again. You know, I renew this vow to be an intentional, willful parent. Jesus was intentional about what he did when he came here, and we need to be the same way. So let's just touch on a few areas. Let's talk about screen time. You know, what do you mean by screen time? How many screens are there? How much time is too much time? How does this work in terms of different ages? And so tell us about screen time and its impact upon young people.
Sure, great, of course. I'll just say one thing, hearkening back to what we were just talking about. So when my parents were raising me, the world was just a simpler place to be. They didn't have to worry about things in the world tearing me apart from them or from my faith. So when I use the term intentional parenting, that's what I mean. There are things that will actively pull your kids away from you as parents and faith. So I like that term intentional parenting because of that. So screen time is a huge issue for kids. And this is a topic that, an issue that's not conservative or liberal, right or left, Christian or not Christian. This is just pure science. There have been so many studies on this topic about screen time. A researcher named Jean Twenge is one of the first people sort of to tackle this. She's written extensively about it. She's coined the term iGen for the generation that has grown up on screens. And her research has shown for years and years and years, and it's continuing, that teens with excessive screen time are twice as likely to suffer from mental health issues such as anxiety and depression. Children who spend a lot of time on screens, by screens I mean their phones, tablets, the internet, even TV screens, any kind of screens, but primarily internet-connected screens. Children's brains are not fully developed, as I mentioned before. If they spend too much time on screens, it can affect their brain development. Too much screen time can lead to distractibility, to difficulty in concentrating. Educators are finding that it's difficult to assign books to children. They're used to short-term blasts of information, not long-term study, things like that. They're less curious about the world because they're sort of in their own little world on their phones or on their tablets. They're less curious about the world. They're easily distracted. They're less socially adept. They're literally spending less time with their peers, actual face-to-face time with their peers, than kids in previous generations. And that's really bad. I mean, that alone can lead to anxiety. You sort of have to get used to being a middle school age kid, right? It's tough. And when it's all online, it's not real. You're not face-to-face dealing with other human beings. So that's a real danger. Distractibility, social ineptitude, social anxiety. And they have difficulty making friends, real friends, friends that you talk to face-to-face. So the studies have shown that being online for even anywhere over 2 hours a day is a significant risk factor for suicide. Now, that's kind of scary, right? So it's just something to bear in mind. The rewiring of the brains, the distractibility, lack of concentration, lack of social aptitude, I guess primarily the concern is mental health issues, suicidality, depression, anxiety. We need to be interacting, they need to be interacting with other human beings, with us primarily, and with other people like their peers.
Well, you know, Marcia, when you say all that, and then we talked about before about being an intentional parent. Well, being an intentional parent means I too have to put the screen down. And, you know, we run a pregnancy medical center, and one of the things we talk about is what for our young moms is bonding with the babies. And we instruct them, when you are feeding your baby, your infant child, don't have a screen in your face and be looking at a screen while you're feeding your baby. You need to make eye contact with your child so that that baby's brains are developing and they're bonding with you. And that's intentional as an adult. And we have to witness as parents what we expect from our children. So, and we have to limit that. And so if you're saying to your teenager, well, you've been on the phone for, you know, 2 hours today and, you know, you logged in, logged off, whatever you did, but then you, the parent, you haven't done any better. So we have to model, we have to be intentional. And we have clients who come in who are giving phones to their 2-year-olds and they're sitting in the lobby and these 2-year-olds are on the telephone watching, you know, some kind of cartoon or whatever it is that they're watching. And this is detrimental.
Totally couldn't agree more. Totally couldn't agree more. There are many solutions to this problem. They're not necessarily easy, but that is a primary one, modeling good behavior, not being on your own phone or your own tablet or your own screen all the time, being with your child when you're with them. And you know, that's interesting that you brought up the issue of feeding a baby with a screen, you know, in front of your face. That is actually an issue that has been studied. There's a technical term for it, which I can't remember right now, but that is becoming an issue. There is scientifically a lack of bonding going on between mother and baby when the mother is on a screen. So that is a real issue. But there are other things that parents can do too. Just talk about phones for a second. I would say in almost all cases, when children have phones, it's parents who are paying the bills, right? So parents can sort of take a leadership role on this. We're paying for this phone, we've bought you this phone, so we're gonna make some rules. We're gonna set some time limits on your phone. We're gonna install some filters. We're gonna reserve the right to check on your activity on your phone, your social media accounts, whatever you're doing on your phone, who you're calling, who's calling you. That's just gonna be part of the deal. It's important, as I was told, to make sure your kids know that in advance. And I was told it may actually make them feel better, feel safer, because they know that you are gonna be looking over their shoulder. You might get some resistance at the beginning, but do it anyway. So screen time, limit your own time on your phone, filters, reserve the right to monitor. For as long as possible, use dumb phones. Have your kids use phones that are not connected to the internet. If you want to be able to reach them or text them or call them, hold off on the smartphones for as long as you possibly can. And another thing to do is to you can manage apps. That's very important, and there's software that you install that can help you do that. I would say limit phone use also by not allowing phones at the family dinner table.
Yes.
And don't allow phones in your kids' bedrooms at night. Take the phones away, put them in the kitchen, put them in your bedroom, whatever, but no phones in the rooms at night.
Mm. Yes. Well, let's go into the area of social media, which is a part of the screens too, but social media, there's various formats, the use of these, what's going on, what parents need to know, the whole area of social media. I'm sure there are some benefits to it, but also negative consequences.
Yeah, absolutely. Social media is kind of a terrifying issue for a lot of kids. Many, many dangers associated with it. First of all, there's just the issue of when kids are on social media and they're presenting themselves to the world, they're not presenting their authentic selves, right? They're presenting a persona that they want the world to see. They're not being really themselves. There's this pressure to be perfect or to look perfect or to do what other kids are doing. you know, talk about peer pressure. It's, you know, peer pressure has been around forever, but when it comes to social media, it's sort of peer pressure to the nth degree. The trouble with social media also is that it encourages kids to, as I said, do what other kids are doing, and that can mean leading them to do things that are dangerous, that are wicked, that are bad. Snapchat in particular, I think, is pretty terrifying. I'm going to read you a quote from a priest who's down in Virginia. He put out a tweet that read like this: "Dear parents, get Snapchat off your kids' phones now. Don't ask, just do it. Let them hate you. That will pass. Love, a priest who hears their sins." So that's some indication there, you know, that kids are, that's the peer pressure element, right? Kids are led to do things to fit in with their peers that they maybe wouldn't ordinarily do. And it can also lead to social isolation. Like I said, you're not being your authentic self. But you're also seeing, often in real time, what everyone else around you is doing, what your peers are doing, where they are. Oh, they're all off at the mall. Why am I not invited? So it can make you feel isolated. It can also lead to depression. It's a tricky thing. And of course, there's also the issue of bullying online, which is a real problem. You know, we hear so much about suicide among young people these days. Bullying is an issue. Sexting is another issue, which is so tricky and so bad in so many obvious ways. Also, in the maybe not so obvious ways that because of laws in certain states, you can be impacted if you are found to be sexting. You can be impacted by that, you know, for the rest of your life. So there are a lot of dangers on social media. You feel left out. There's bullying, sexting, Snapchat, very tricky. And the thing is, parents often don't know what's going on in social media. Kids are often adept at setting up social media accounts not in their real names. So parents really need to be aware. Another thing, I try to fill the book as much as I can with as I could with solutions. And one of the solutions is filters. There are filters out there for phones. There are ways to monitor what your kids are doing on phones. And I think a lot of parents have an attitude that, well, I'll just let my kids do what they want to do, and they'll be responsible. And a lot of parents, there have been studies, actually, that parents don't talk to their kids about what they should and shouldn't do, what the dangers of being online are. So having conversations with your kids about all these social media apps is critical. Encouraging them to be to talk to you about things that come up that they're confused about or concerned about, and monitoring their activity. And there's, again, back to Dr. Leonard Sachs, who I quote in the book, wonderful, wonderful psychologist and pediatrician. And he says that for parents who are concerned that they're sort of stepping over the line by monitoring what their kids are doing online, he says it's a matter of protecting them. He says, for example, you wouldn't let your teenage daughter go to a college fraternity party. So why shouldn't you monitor who they're interacting with online? And that is such a good point, because they could be interacting with people who are pretending to be someone else, pretending to be their age, pretending to be a girl mm-hmm. when they're really an adult, pretending to be someone who's actually good when they're in truth stalking them or trying to groom them for something. So parents really need to take the lead on this stuff. They need to be aware of what's going on in their kids' social media apps, and not be afraid to limit what they can do.
Right, yeah. And most importantly, they need to know they can take it away from those children too. They gave it exactly. to them and they could take it away, and there'll be restrictions. When these rules are broken, you don't own it. I do. I paid the bill, and I'm going to take it away from you.
Marcia, we're going to hold you over for the final segment, and so we're going to take a break. The book is Don't Let the Culture Raise Your Kids. It's chock full of recommendations, studies. She mentions filters, other things. They're all listed here, ways that you can protect your children, limit the content that they're looking at. We'll be right back. Plenty more to come. Don't go away.
Welcome back. Well, you might be sitting home wondering, well, the cat is out of the box. I can't do anything about this now. Yes, you can. It's never too late to hit the reset button. Get a hold of this book, Don't Let the Culture Raise Your Kids, and Fix What Is Broken. Now, Marcia, you wrote a whole chapter to pornography. Tell our family why you devoted a whole chapter to pornography in this book.
Thanks, Joy. Yes, I will. I feel strongly about this. I did a lot of research into it, interviewed a lot of people about it, and it is, I think it's a topic that people kind of turn away from. It can be embarrassing to talk about or think about. I think a lot of people, including parents, have a sort of, well, boys will be boys attitude about pornography. Well, everyone's going to see it, you know, and what's the harm? What's the big deal? The trouble is, it really is a big deal, and for a number of reasons. First of all, pornography that children are going to come into contact with these days isn't, as I say in the book, it's not your father's pornography. It's not Playboy magazine. These are online movie images. And there have been studies about this, studies that have looked at the kinds of pornography that is out there. And the deviancy, the horrible things that are included in porn these days are nothing like what kids would have been exposed to, say, even 30 years ago. Pornography these days is filled with rape and torture and degradation. It's not about relationships. It's deviant. It's evil. I'm going to read you a quote. There's a psychologist who I interviewed for this book, Dr. Jill Manning, and her specialty, she works with people, teens, children, and adults who've been exposed to porn and have suffered negative effects from it, including addiction. And here's what she wrote about pornography. I believe pornography is the most successfully marketed insult and attack on our divine nature as human beings that has ever existed. There's never been anything as calculated and widespread and so effective at reaching so many people at such a young age. So that's pretty terrifying. Not only does porn disconnect us from relationships, children who see pornography, first of all, their brains are malleable at this point. It's very difficult to unsee an image, and some of the images that they're seeing are deviant, to say the least. It's not about God's idea or the church's teaching of what sex is. It can cause them serious harm in their future lives in terms of relationships, romantic relationships, sexual relationships. So it's a really important topic that people shouldn't turn away from. I'm just going to give you a couple of statistics. You stop me when you need to. 93% of boys and 63% of girls report being exposed to online pornography before the age of 18. 93% of boys before they're 18 have seen online porn. The largest group of viewers of online porn is children between the ages of 12 and 17. The largest group of online porn viewers, 12 to 17. Average age of first viewing, 11 years old. 57% of teens seek out pornography at least once a month. There are over 4 million pornography websites. And pornography can be addictive. Dr. Manning works with kids and adults who are literally addicted to pornography, like it's a drug.
Marcia, we're gonna have to leave it at that point. But so very grateful for your sharing today. You remind me of the saying of our Lord: "You will know the truth, the bad and the good truth, and the truth will set you free if you apply yourself." Thank you so much for the gift that you've given to the church. Don't let the culture raise your kids. EWTNRC.com. God bless you and all of your loved ones. Keep it on EWTN. Bye now.